All right.
So I just want to make one comment before we go forward. So at the end of the last Chabura, we spent a lot of time trying to show that even if Hezek Shein Onikar is a Knas, so it's not a Nezek Midaraisa, still the Knas has like actual compensation or mammon aspects to it. That was what we ended off with on Wednesday. That sound familiar? So that was like my exercise in apologetics in the spirit of the Psalm Sofer to try to show that however unintuitive Hezek Shein Onikar is, still the Knas, whatever penalty there is for Hezek Shein Onikar, is going to bump it up to quasi-Nezikin status. So that's what we ended off with. I wanted to make one comment further to that this morning, and that is, how do we define Shmezid when it comes to imposing the Knas of Hezek Shein Onikar? So recall the Mishnah in Gittin, and Daf Nun Gimel ended up saying that for Hezek Shein Onikar, you only chai if it's b'mezid. According to Rabbi Yochanan, that's Peslav Shmei Hezek, but Kedei Shelo Yelech Kolecha V'Yitameh Tarosov Shel Chaveiro, or Mechayvi when it's a case of b'mezid. I just want to point out that the more we think that the Knas is really like a fee of Tashlumin of Nezikin, it would make sense that we'd have a very low threshold for what constitutes mezid. Right? Mezid is not just like, oh, you intentionally and egregiously try to harm your friend's property, but, you know, it's anything that's like Karov Le Shia would rise to the level of mezid, and Shogig is really reserved for like the exceptional cases. So in that spirit, I want to point to these two verses in Tosin and Gidin and Gimel Aleph and Tosin Sanhedrin on the Gimel Beis. So the first Tosos on Nun Gimel and Gidin. So he points to this case in the Choros and Sanhedrin. This is the case of a Dayan Shetaa. Dayan makes a mistake. He's Metame Esatahar. And in this case, the Dayan, not only does he paskin that the Tame thing is Tahar, he acts on his psak. And so he's like, oh, look, it's Tahar, and he puts it next to some kajim or something. So the Gemara's psak is that he has to pay. The Tosef asks, this should be a case of Hezek Shein Onikar. Right? The Dayan just made a mistake in his psak and put the Tame together with the Tahar. Where's the, if it's Hezek Shein Onikar, it should only be Chayav and Mezid. So he goes with Refrain's answer. The Dayan acted egregiously. He acted b'mezid when he tried to reinforce his psak by saying, look, it's tahar, and I'll put it in contact with something that's hektish, or with chuma, to show you that it's tahar. So Tosu's point is that the extra action of the Dayan is considered to be a b'mezid act, even though he had no intent to harm somebody else's property. But the mere fact that it was gratuitous constitutes a mezid violation of Hezek. So I think this is a good example where our threshold for what constitutes mezid in this context is very low. You want to say something, Isaac? Or?
He would putter if he doesn't act on it?
The Dayan would be putter if he didn't act on it, correct. Because Hezek Shein Onikar. Okay? Tosfos in Sanhedrin Lama Gimel Amud Beis has a similar point. So this is a case where the Dayan doesn't even act on it, according to this Tosfos. So he says, picture of Ben Ephraim, Rav Yochanan Amar Dvar Torah Echad Shogeg V'Echad Mezid Pater Ma'atam Rav Mezid Chayav Shleik Lecha Mitam Mitar Rosav Shachad Evrim Patani. Okay. Lamai de buki b'maskana shenata v'nasan b'yad yish l'chayev kum amezid yelama lo la'adam litav l'ikim b'yad. That's what we just saw in the first Tosos, right? The fact that the Dayan acted gratuitously in changing hands or acting upon his sock, that's kum amezid. But then he says, well, what about the maskana of the Gemara that says v'alamai l'tisvir le'meikara she'irvan v'alabayis kasha? The Gemara seems to hold that even if the Dayan paskins and then based off the sock of the Dayan, the v'alabayis is ma'arev the Taros with Kachim, the Dayan will still be Chayiv. So how do you explain that? So here he wants to argue that the Dayan is considered to be acting b'mezid simply because he knew that the Baal HaBayis will act on his Pesach. It's a difficult stretch of the concept of emezid, right? So Tosafot seems to have a very flexible definition of emezid in applying it to Hesek Sheino Nigar. So again, the more you think that almost the default is that Hesek Sheino Nigar will be chayiv, and the real p'tur is the p'tur of b'shogeg, then these positions of Tosafot make sense. So I think that's consistent with the general theme that we saw on Wednesday, which seems to maintain that Hesek Sheino Nigar, even the knas, is a quasi mammon kind of obligation. Good? Comments? Liad? Comments?
No.
No? Donnie? But? Good? Alright, does that sound reasonable to everyone? Anybody want to raise any other comments from Wednesday? No? Yeah? No? Alright, good. So let's move on then. So what I want to do today is I want to move on to the actual cases of Tashlumei Nezikin, of Hesek Sheino Nigar. And what we'll try to do is we'll try to reconstruct. What?
Who's the author?
Robert, right?
Oh, I'm Yosef.
Sorry. Oh, Yosef, sorry. I'm sorry. Yosef, do you have any comments?
It's no problem. Cool.
My bad, Yosef. I'm sorry. See, so that's what happens when you're never here. But it's not true, because I know Shlomo is someone. I mess with Shlomo's now.
Ito, are you just trying to inflate the sheer numbers?
That's right.
Which is what you told me to...
Yosef, are you registered? No, you're not registered. Right. Shlomo's registered.
Yeah, he's registered.
Yeah.
Okay, so
would you like a...
It's Amigo. If Amigo Dad Zolti's registered, then...
Should we send a booth outside first that people register?
Yeah. So I think the most difficult part of Hesek Sheino Nigar is trying to understand why you should be potter meikar adin. So the best way of approaching that, in my opinion, is through the Chassam Sofer, which we saw, who argues that meikar adin, you're not meant to be potter. Meikar adin, you're chayiv. Just the Torah gave a wide latitude and wide discretion to dayanim in trying to figure out how to apply the chiyuv tashlumin and Hesek Sheino Nigar. On Wednesday, we asked, well, that seems strange. Why couldn't the Torah hold that you're chayiv and then leave the amount up to the discretion of the dayanim? So I think the best response to that for now is to say that it's not just the amount that's in flux, but even what constitutes Hesek Sheino Nigar is going to vary widely based off the case and based off the local circumstance. So we'll see this when we look at the cases of Hesek Sheino Nigar right now. So I think if we find that there really are just different ways of conceptualizing Hesek Sheino Nigar, and whether it's going to constitute Hesek will be so contingent on like the market structure or the local circumstances, then I think the Chassam Sofer's argument gains plausibility. Because even in just figuring out what constitutes Hesek Sheino Nigar will be so difficult, that it can't just be that, oh, there's one blanket rule of Chayiv. Each case has to be determined locally. So I think that would motivate what's behind the Chassam Sofer's position. So let's look at the cases. So some of these cases are explicit Hesek Sheino Nigar cases.
Give an example of mud.
What?
Give an example of mud. Like the same damage in two different cases wouldn't. Like
yeah.
One would be five.
Exactly. The external. Well, I say it's best to just go through these cases and see how these cases bring out that idea. But is that background? Is that suggestion clear to everyone? Okay. So the Gemara Bava Kamma on Sani Chesem et Aleph, this will be our first case, gives us the case of Rabba, Tzoreim Ozen Parasa Shel Chaveiro. So it's like I pierce someone else's animal's ear, or I make a slight incision on the ear. So the Gemara says, I'm Pater. My Chaima, Parke de Chaima. Look, the animal's still alive, and Lava Blevlo Midi. V'kulu shvarim lav l'gav mizbeach kaimi. So the only real nafkamina of the pierced ear is that it apostles it as a karban. It's a mum. But given the condition that most animals aren't going to be brought as karbanos, there's no actual damage. The plaintiff suffered no loss on the assumption that the animal was not going to be brought as a karban. Okay? So, the Mukayosin here says, for example, Hatsorim, Pogim de lo achis midame, it doesn't detract from the value of the animal. Ela she'ena ru'ya l'hakraba. But what the incision does do is that the plaintiff loses the chance of bringing it as a karban. I think it's a nice way of just characterizing the case. Tosos commenting on this Gemara says explicitly that according to Rabbo, who says it's Mutter, it's because Hezek she'en nikar is lo shmei Hezek. So the reason why you're Mutter here is because Hezek she'en nikar lo shmei Hezek. Tosos then points out, but according to the Manda Amar, aval Manda Amar shmei Hezek, kol she'en de mechaye b'tzorim, de minkar tve. If you hold Hezek she'en nikar shmei Hezek, you would be chayev because there's an actual incision. There's something to see. But on the assumption that Hezek Shein Onikar Lav Shmei Hezek, the Chiddush of Rabba, is that this is really considered an Onikar. Because the only nafkamina is with respect to Karbanos. And on the assumption that most animals are not brought as Karbanos, that nafkamina is not relevant to determining the value of this animal.
This isn't super relevant, but what would you be chayv exactly in that case? Because if there was no loss, like what's the amount that you're gonna get? Like, is it the amount that like you'd have to buy a new animal for a korban?
Right.
Or like that?
So you'd have to, if Yakir was here, then he could do the calculation for us. But it'd be some calculation about like how much that loss opportunity is worth to you.
Okay.
Right. So like, what's the difference in value between an animal that could be brought as a karban and an animal that can't be brought, on the assumption that most karbanos are not being brought as karbanos.
Mm-hmm. Like, is there a little mark,
is there some markdown?
Like, no, yeah, exactly.
It's hard to know. Remember the Nuk Yosef said, Hogan lo afkes midame.
Yeah, so that's awesome.
Right, so it's difficult to know what this means. There's no, but I would say that maybe there's no, so, it gets tricky, meaning, so there's no loss on the assumption that it wasn't going to be brought as a karban,
mm-hmm.
right? But maybe on the possibility that it would have been brought as a karban, then maybe there is some value difference to the object, right? So the damage is, I think, the lost chance of bringing this out of karban, though we have no idea whether, in fact, this would have been brought as a karban. Does everybody see the case? So I think this is a good example already where you see that whether or not this should constitute hezek will be so contingent on the local circumstances, right? I mean, you have to figure out what are the actual probabilities that this guy would have brought this as a karban, and even then, what the debt difference in value is worth to him. Yeah, do you want to say something?
I was going to say, it's unclear exactly how to read it. Because it could be saying, he wants to bring it as a korban, so therefore, here's the term that I can bring as a korban, and assuming he won't have, then there's no loss of value. But it also makes it more generalized saying, whenever you have a taina that said, well, it could still have value outside of being a korban, even if you knew this guy was going to bring a korban, your bad that knew it,
right. Still
the fact that it has value outside of that function would still be enough of a reason to say, no, that's lashmi has it.
Right.
So it's like it's ambiguous in the reasoning, even of like the stuff
Correct. And even if we knew that this guy was going to do it, there's still
argument to be made. Still that reasoning.
Yeah. So I think this is a good example. So I think we could characterize. So one of the things that will emerge in the next few moments is that there are going to be different concepts of Hezek Shein Onikar. It's not like there's one kind of Hezek Shein Onikar. This kind of Hezek Shein Onikar, I think we could classify as a lost chance. Right? And the question is a lost chance considered to be hezek? And I think the answer there is that really it's indeterminate. Right? It's really an open question that maybe should be left to the discretion of the dayanim in that case, in the spirit of the sum sofer. Does everybody see that?
Mm-hmm.
What do you make of this lost chance? So there's some famous cases about these kinds of things.
You're kind of just argumentatively ignoring the
Yeah, that's not really the
I mean, like, he's basically pointing out that any time that the Mazi can claim that I didn't, it can actually cause a lost chance, because you can use it for something else.
But he still lost a chance, right?
Doesn't matter.
Fine. So fine. So
there's some loss.
Saying that the Gemara is establishing that lost chances don't matter.
Yeah.
Not that it's up to some discretion.
But the Gemara does say if a kulu shvarim lav legavim hizbech.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, the only time it would be an issue would be if kulu shvarim were legavim hizbech, because then there'd be no function.
Then it would be a lost chance. Then it would be a complete loss of the use.
An actual loss.
Exactly. So the Gemara establishing opportunity cost doesn't matter. That's one way to read it. It is ambiguous.
You're saying legamri.
Exactly. Is it saying, well, let's reconstruct and figure out what he was going to do, and our best bet is he probably wasn't going to offer as a korban? Or is it saying it doesn't even matter what he was going to do? The fact that there are functions for shvarim outside of dima korban means, in this case, we can't be mechayavu.
And why wouldn't it be mechayavu?
Why wouldn't it be?
Because a lost chance is not damage.
Exactly, it's not damage.
So he suffered no
loss. Factor opportunity cost in halacha. Nothing actually is damaged. I think it's inherently ambiguous and blind.
Yeah.
But if the majority function was to separate the korban,
it could be that majority function.
Yeah,
it's not fair from the Gemara. Was it
right.
Majority?
Right. I mean, then
it
would be
opportunity. That would be like if you had a fork. I broke all the tines off. I said, yeah, but you still use the spoon. No, you have a fork. That's what you use it for. It's broken. It doesn't matter that you could construct something else. The way you determine the use is like what you typically use it for. So if everybody used shvarim exclusively for korbanos,
well, why can you only have one specific function?
Well, it's not only one, but it's like the majority function. It's like a good rule of thumb for determining whether or not there's an actual value impact here, or whether no, it's just merely an artificial aesthetic bruise on the ear or whatever.
Right.
So you determine what people usually do with it.
But so what if 99% of animals were used for carbonos?
Then maybe you could say that clearly the like intrinsic to the definition of an animal is
right.
The ability to bring it as a carbon.
And there's actual, it's not just an opportunity cost, there's actual.
You don't have an animal anymore, you don't have a car anymore.
That's what I'm saying.
But say, I'm just pointing out it's ambiguous in the line of the Gemara, how you interpret that.
Correct. But I think we agree though that the Gemara is saying that the lost chance is hesitant or neither.
No, the lost chance is
hesitant or neither.
So I'm saying it's ambiguous. The Gemara could be saying that the lost chance is hesitant or neither. Or the Gemara could be saying the only time is hesitant or neither. The only time is hesitant or neither is if you knew the person would have been using that chance, capitalizing on the chance. If you knew for a fact the person never would have capitalized on that, you knew that this was foolish, then maybe there's no consideration. Maybe it's not even a question of the training card. There's nothing there.
What raises that possibility?
Because at the end of the day, the only thing that matters is for the Gemara is foolish one, and all the time you say, I mean that.
But that's the basis for the tour. The basis for
the
basis for the tour is Hesed
Shin
or Nikar.
Yeah, it doesn't take a stance on that.
Right.
But why are you saying it takes a stance one way or another? It doesn't make sense in either.
Well, because the Gemara is telling us that this, assuming like Tosafot says, this is Hesed Shin or Nikar.
Yeah, assuming it's Hesed Shin or Nikar.
So it's Hesed Shin or Nikar because of it's just a mere lost opportunity, right?
Unless it's Hesed Shin or Nikar, but the reason you're puttered nonetheless is because it's a mere lost opportunity.
But we know that Hesed Shin or Nikar itself is a patur.
True.
That's the reason for the tour, right?
Yeah, that's true.
So I think our machlokas in how to read this is about whether it's kulu shvarim or whether there's some room for like, what if majority of shvarim were olalim mizbeach?
That is true, but it's more important than that because my point that's about kulu shvarim means it's no longer open to such custom soferi subjective case by case reconstruction. We don't reconstruct these. We have general rules. The general rule is about market value, and market value is determined by what do you sell this for, or what do you use it for.
Right, but you have to determine what's its
true.
Use.
True, I'm not saying
it's
purely objective, but I'm saying it's not a historical reconstruction.
That's fair.
Yeah.
But what I want to take out of this Gemara then, I think, is that I think this is the best case where it makes sense to speak about a controversy of Hesed Shein Onigar. Because what's controversial here is whether or not there's an actual loss. Whether or not you've suffered damage. And that's why Hezek Shein Onigar is arguably Lav Shmei Hezek. It's not like the cases where it's clear there's a loss, just there's no visible loss. Or there's no sensible loss. Right? Here, what's at stake is whether or not this constitutes Hezek. So this is like the best case for like the Ramban, where in the end of the day, it's Lav Shmei Hezek because you suffered no damage. And then that's what's really going on in this discussion. Jonah.
And just to play off this with something that I was thinking about, is that there seems to be, to use like Lashana sometimes used in your father's shir, about the hard versus the soft. There's like a hard, that's like a hard. Hezek Shein Onigar, it's really a Maisa Hezek, we just can't be the high of you, or is it that it's kind of more of a soft that you didn't even really do anything?
Right, this is soft.
That kind of, this seems to be like more of a soft formulation.
Exactly, that's why this would make sense, why Hezek Shein Onigar lashed from Hezek, assuming
right.
This is like a real good case of Hezek Shein Onigar. Okay. Elliot, sounds good?
Yeah, just curious, would there be like any room within a hesitation maker to say that the person, even though there's no necessarily real hesitation, the person himself has felt that, like, has some sort of tsar based upon like your action toward his animal? Like, could you have tsar without?
Yes, usually we'll talk about tsar later in the year, but tsar, you usually can't have tsar without any kavala, or at least some physical contact. Isaac keeps asking about this. Tsar and boshas, you need, at minimum, you need someone, there to be some contact. Like somebody spits on you, that's like the minimum threshold for tsar and boshas.
Piercing the ear, that can be enough.
But it's the animal.
The animal.
So it's not kavala against a person.
Okay.
So you wouldn't have tsar and boshas. But I think what's going on here is the question about the lost opportunity. Okay, good. Now you can see the Pnei Yeshua here says, I think he gets close to saying this in Daf Tzadi Chesim et Aleph, commenting on this Gemara, appears to Hadikama Rava Kul Shvarim Lav Gav Mizbeach Kaimi, Hainu Mehai Taima Gufa de Mishvil Kach Lashem Hezek Shein Onika. The reason why the Gemara refers to Tzorim, why Tzorim Ozen Barah is Hezek Shein Onika, is because Mos Shvarim, or Kul Shvarim, are Lav Gav Mizbeach Kaimi. So what makes it Hezek Shein Onika is not that the mum itself is imperceptible. It's not like you made a scratch in the inner ear of the animal. That's not why it's Hezek Shein Onikar. It's Hezek Shein Onikar because it's not clear that the market value was affected on the assumption that the animal would not have been brought as a carbon. That's why it's Hezek Shein Onikar. Right? And then again, what's interesting is if you hold like Chizkiah that Hezek Shein Onikar Shmei Hezek, then you're going to view the mere lost opportunity as a kind of bona fide damage. Yeah, so the Pnei Yeshua is pointing out that the reason why this case of Tzorim Ozen Para is Hezek Shein Onikar is not because the scratch itself is imperceptible, but it's because Kulu Shvarim Lav Gav Mizbeach Kaimi. Meaning, on the assumption that the Kulu Shvarim are not being brought as karbanos, you didn't affect the market value of the animal.
Was that not the obvious?
In the Gemara itself, it's somewhat of an open question. Because the Gemara says Tzorim Ozen, which is like this some mum in the ear, in conjunction with Kulu Parim Lav Gav Mizbeach Kaimi. Ben.
What's the line between something being Nezek?
Yeah. Let me just make one more point, then I'll take your question, because I think this is a little wrap up. Tosfos Bava Kama Masechta Chasim et Aleph points out that had this animal already have been kachim, and then you went and made the mum in its ear, then it would be considered hezek hanikar, and you'd be chayiv. That's what this Tosis is pointing out. The Mishnah, which holds an analogous case that you're chayiv, he says after the hema kedusha, the vade legab mizbeach kaima. So once we know that the animal is already hektish and it's omid l'mizbeach, then if you're tsori mozno, you will be chayiv. Right? Because now we know that this animal falls into the class of animals that were going to be brought out as karbanos. So your actions did affect its value. And then it becomes hezek hanikar. Ben.
What you say, but just to clarify that, so the pigman is already kadosh?
Yeah. So he says, the Mishnah, which seems to hold their chayiv from a matel mum in an animal, that's why it's different from the tsorim ozen parasol shachaveru case. So the point is, in the same case where the animal is already vadai l'mizbeach kaimi, then you would be chayiv for the hezek.
Does that mean it's already kadosh, or just that you knew it was going to be kadosh? Because that could be a real difference, yeah.
So, the Gemara says, the language of the Mishnah that Joseph is referring to is the case of nifsala me'agavim mizbeach. But what's relevant? So he's just saying the case in the Mishnah is a case where it's already hagdish. And the reason why you're liable is because vada legab mizbeach kaima. But what if you have a vada legab mizbeach kaima without it being kadosh? Right? Okay. So the guy designates that he will designate this as a karban.
Right, so someone who disagrees also, so it's still not an issue in this case, and just say the point is because it's already muftash is the reason why it's higher there.
Right, but the point is that even though the scratch arguably is Enonikar, right?
I mean, I understand. My point is someone who just disagreed, I'm going back to my point again, that you don't have to care about historical reconstruction, and you can say we don't care that this was bad and Mizbeah. The actual point is that it's already muftash, and when you put a mum on it, there's now a lacking in its muktash status that's more significant or more tangible that actually matters. And it's not about historical reconstruction of, oh, is this bad that actually the world is bad or not, but it's about changing status that is tangible.
But I would resist that by saying that the determination, the case by case determination, still has to be about the background market conditions. Meaning, so you really have to determine whether or not this was hektish and whether it loses its value because it got a vote.
Yeah.
Right. So the point is that, like, by analogy, if I sell you a theater ticket, right?
Yeah.
I don't know if that's a good example. We'll get to other examples that I think we'll flesh this out more clearly later on. So hold on to that. Ben.
So what's the line between, like, I guess something not being considered nezik all, because meaning, if I do damage to an object, let's say, but it really is no, it doesn't do any real damage to the object, except maybe it doesn't allow the owner to now do something very, very obscure. I mean, what's the line between something that we have here?
Good. That's Hezek Shanonikar, right?
Okay.
Right, where like you lose out one possible use.
Why would be as if you get supposed to just like nothing? Like as if nothing happened.
I might want to respond to Ben.
Why is it still considered damage?
What?
Why is it still considered damage of any sort?
Yeah, do you hear his point?
If what you inhibited was someone's very like esoteric, very unique use of the object, then why is it considered anything? Like, what's the line between like considering having done nothing to the object versus having done damage because someone won?
I think you're raising like a great backdrop question that's behind this entire study. Like, even when we talk about value, are we talking about market value or individual utility? Something could have no market value, but the way I use it provides a lot of value to my life. I would pay money to be able to keep doing it.
I want to talk about these cases where somebody has a big head. It's like, you know, Leah gets a lot of annoy out of his Alan Edmund boots that he just brought. But for the rest of us, it's worthless.
That's true. I thought they were ice
skating.
Shoelaces.
Yeah, but they do talk. Nesivis talks about these cases where something has its market value is zero, but its value, its personal value to the person, to the owner, is greater than zero.
Right.
So is there going to be nezik in that case? That's what we're going to talk about in the Shuma Sugya. But I think the answer to your question is the correct answer, I think, is that there is no clear principled distinction between them. And that's exactly that's the virtue of the Chasam Sofer's Hezek Shanonikar Lav Shmei Hezek approach. Like, there just is no clear way of establishing what the bottom threshold for nezek is.
None of it is nezek.
What?
So none of it's.
Well, it's Hezek Shanonikar, which is supposed to be based off Bezin Makin Bonch and Shalom and Adin. Right, that's why it has to be local and just assessed on a case by case basis. Because there's no rule for what's the bottom. The minimum requirement for what constitutes nezek, as you see in the Sorem Ozen Parah case, right? It really just depends on the background conditions about what was it going to be used for, right? What are these commodities generally used for? Was it hektish or was it not hektish? And so I think that's the virtue of explaining. I think this is herein lies the explanation for Hezek Shanonikar Lav Shmei Hezek, because there are cases that border on it. Actually, they're not being any damage. So does that answer your
yeah?
I should tell you about this case. It's a very famous British case. I don't think I mentioned this. So this guy got some like lung disease, which like causes blood to necrose, and he shows up to the doctor. And at the point that he shows up to the doctor, he's a 25% chance of living. Okay, so like 75% of people in his condition die, and then the doctor misdiagnoses it. So okay, we got Shlomo and Yosef here. So the doctor misdiagnoses it, and the guy gets bumped into a category where 100% of people in his condition now die. Okay? Because of the misdiagnosis. So the doctor's negligence bumped him, deprived him of his 25% chance of survival. Right? So the guy originally filed suit, and they're like, oh, you have no case, because in order to win a tort case, you have to show that it's more probable or not than not that you were harmed. And here you can only show that with a 25% chance that you were harmed, right? Because a 25% chance that his negligence killed you, a 75% chance he would have died anyway. So he's like, okay. And they refile suit, and they say, we're not filing for the negligence and the patient dying, but we're filing for, we're arguing that there's 100% chance that he deprived me of my 25% chance of survival. So he wasn't suing for the actual damage of dying. He was suing for the lost chance of remaining in the reference class where 25% of those people live. This raised like this is the beginning of the literature on whether is lost chance itself to, is lost chance considered to be a harm. It's very analogous to what's going on over here, right? Is the lost chance of being makdish, this animal, itself considered to be a harm? Did everybody see the analogy? So that machlokes about whether the doctor harming you by taking away your 25% chance of living, is that nezek or is that like nezek or lapshmei nezek? So I think the halachic answer right here is to say, well, it's this in-between category of hezek shein or nikar, it's hezek shein or nikar, right? Which is like somewhere in between, right? Not no damage at all. And so I think that's just nice about this case. Isaac.
What is the case where you have vada gavmuta chayma and it's not hekdesh?
That what?
You have vada gavmuta chayma, but it isn't already hekdesh.
I think the guy said, I will be makdish there. Like, he designated this, right? It's in his, like, a special farm where he's...
How's the vada?
Okay.
And he only goes to your shalayim once a year. So, like, you know...
Or the guy owns animals for hekdesh. The guy specializes in selling. The guy lives in Yerushalayim and he specializes in selling these animals to potential karbanos bringers. So he raises them as like future karbanos, right? That's that would be a
market.
Yeah, it is a very niche market. But, yeah, I'm saying if there's a market for halal animal boots, there could be a market for karbanos. Right? So.
Who made their shoes?
What?
Who made their shoes?
Little children in China.
No.
I'm not sure the doubt is so analogous because in the case of lost chance or probability, it's not clear whether statistical probability applies to individual. Like, yeah, you have just in like broader world, like just because you have a 75% chance of that happening doesn't necessarily mean that you have access to that because you're an individual. You can't go through 100 scenarios through all those. That's like just by people, I think, just misunderstand, like probably, I'm not saying in this case, but just because you have a 25% chance of living, you might, you know, you don't have access to all those. That's just because that's like a societal definition.
Yeah, so it is. That's one of the objections to why it can't be considered to be, you can't say the doctor harmed him.
Right.
Because what does it mean to fall into a reference class where you have 25%? It means of 100 people who present with similar conditions, 25 of them will survive and 75 will die. But if we knew, if there's no epistemic uncertainty about your particular condition, we would know that there's some fact of the matter that when you showed up to the doctor, you either were going to live or you weren't going to live. So you can't say the doctor harmed you.
Right?
Yeah. But that assumes, I mean, it's not good that's right, because that assumes that the causal processes are determinate. I mean, it assumes that there is a fact of the matter that the patient was either going to live or going to die.
Right.
If you think causal processes are indeterminate, then actually when you showed up at the doctor, there was no fact of the matter whether you were going to live or going to die, and the doctor in fact harmed you or he deprived you of that 25% chance. So it's an open question on the assumption that causal processes are indeterminate, whether it's considered harm or not.
Yeah.
That's the...
Yeah, the second thing is I'm wondering whether the case of hezek shein or nikar, could the hezek itself be that it's not nikar, that it's not recognizable, that the person feels that, you know, there was harm done to them, but that it's not manifest in any way. And that itself could be a kind of mechayev.
So why would it be a mechayev that it's the mere fact that it's not visible?
Well, that's kind of the, like,
I see the appeal of saying something like that, right?
Because like, that, you know, you want
the hezek consists in it not being nikar.
Right.
But usually these cases are like no, like
it's wrong.
You're just getting rocked by your intuition. Like your intuition is telling you that, but you overrate your intuition. It's not rational. You know you're not.
Yeah, but a lot of this isn't rational. You know.
So what's the idea? The idea is that
it's like a
hezek
ria, you know,
kind of. Shmei hezek. No. Yeah, hezek ria is shmei hezek. Usually, that's the.
Well, you know, like, but hezek shein of nikar, you know, could have, like, it's not recognizable.
But why does the fact that it's not nikar
like,
make it?
You did something to my property that I didn't want to.
Right. So like a trespass where there's no damage. That's like more of like a insidious kind of violation than. Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure.
It's like a right. Like, you don't have that right to do that.
Yeah, I don't know. It doesn't strike me as... I don't know. What do you guys think? What do you think of Shlomo's suggestion?
I think it's
We know Noah doesn't like it, but.
Seems a little circular.
What?
Seems a little circular.
So you don't like it either?
Yeah.
That was an indication. I don't see any indication of that being part of the fight of hesitation and humor.
I mean, if we're talking about like subjective value, then, you know, it's going to get into that problem anyway.
What do you mean subjective value?
Well, if you lost or opportunity cost, if you can't bring that to carbon anymore, right? You know, that's also a sign of very subjective. Like, for me, like, this could have been a carbon, now it's not.
So I think that's the question. That's the question whether like this lost opportunity constitutes Nezek. But I don't agree with your further point that it's precisely because there's no perceptible change mm-hmm. that therefore it constitutes Nezek. So I don't know what you think about it. Do you have another point or
no,
you do. Alright. Okay, so that's the first case. This next case, this Nisalim Agav, is actually very similar, so we don't have to look at it separately. But basically, the Gemara, I'll just mention very briefly, the Mishnah in the Kamat Zadi Bav Mevez talks about a case of you cause the animal to be Nishla Nagav Mezbeah. So Rashi says that's a case where you make a mum that's Eino Nikar. So again, imperceptible mum. And then he says, the Chol HaBehim Oslav Mezbeah Kami. So you're Plater in that case, because again, not all Behemos are Omer Mezbeah. So Achronim are very bothered by these two Rashis because. On the first Rashi, it sounds like it's Hezek Shenar Nigar because the blemish is not perceptible. Right? The wound is not Nigar. For the second Rashi, it makes it sound like it's Hezek Shenar Nigar because the background conditions are such that there's no lost value.
I'm confused also. If it's Dukin Shimon, that's not even a real moon. Dukin Shimon in the past, like, isn't that the whole point of the category? It's a moon that evaluates for a temporary amount of time, but after you wait long enough that it goes away.
So I think here the assumption is that there is some sort of lost opportunity for the karma.
Isn't it just saying that you lost opportunity to give it to the next 7 days while it recovers?
Yeah, so I guess that would be the value of the
idea. Okay, I'm saying that's still very different from what we said, right? The case
yeah.
of that one.
Yeah.
This is a temporary validation from this layoff. So
yeah.
That goes back.
The question is, which one of these makes it, hesitant or the fact that it wasn't heckish anyway? So there's no nafkamina to the blemish? Or is it the fact that the blemish is Eino Nigar? Right? That's the tension. So that's what Taras Chaim asks in Rashi. He's like, I don't understand which one of these points is making Hezek Shenar Nigar. He says, Vein Tvekot Rashi, Vein Dvar Muvanim, Tame Yikara Kasav, Denisul Abimum Shenar Nigar, Mashma the time of the Tur, Mishun the Hezek Shenar Nigar, Hu, Vafilu Kaimel Mizbeach Nami Pater. He's saying, from the first Rashi it sounds like it's the fact that the blemish is imperceptible, and then even if it was hektish already, it should be hezek shenar nigar. Right? So even though there's a loss in value, there's no visible change in the object. Right? So the Achronim, there are two approaches in the Achronim to resolve this. The Taras Chaim point. Jonah, do you also want me to say it again? So he just says, you see the two tensions, the two points in Rashi?
Yeah.
The first point Rashi makes is that the mum itself is not nigar. Right? The second point Rashi says is that this animal was not hektish. So to our scientists, I don't understand why Rashi needs both points. Suppose it is hektish. The fact that the mum is Eino Nigar should make it lav shmei hezek. Right? You can't see the blemish, so there's no perceptible change. So it's hezek shenar nigar, lav shmei hezek.
We can say it's both.
What?
We can say it's both. Or it to be the obehimos would have been better, I mean, then the lack of opportunity for the
Excellent.
Week would have been.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what the Achronim are going to say here. But you see, the Taras Chaim thinks that, no, he's like dealing with this like physical conception of Hezek Shenar Nigar. It's like there's no change in the object.
Yeah.
And he can't get over that, right? What the other Achronim are going to say is that even if, and this is what the Bach changes Rashi, Achal Pi Shen Nigar, so he wants to say, Bach says, even on the assumption that the blemish is Nigar, so there is a physical change to the animal, on the assumption that it was lo kaini le mizbeach, there's no loss. So it's hezek shenar nigar in terms of, yes, there's a change in the object, but the change in the object didn't create any loss for the plaintiff, for the owner. Right, so Bach changes it. So aval pi shen nigar, v'chule. You're pater because kol behemos lav le mizbeach kaini. So you see that? So this is similar to the way we explained the first case, that hezek shenar nigar now is really about the background market conditions, not necessarily about whether there's some perceptible change in the animal.
Is it only temporary?
What?
Is it only temporary when the mother were
individual?
What? Is it only temporary?
I didn't think so. I didn't think that these... are you sure that all the Badook and Shevin are just...
I don't know every case. I know that the case of Badook and Shevin in general means a muma over. It's right. A mum that passes after like 7 days. And
I guess
after 7 days, you can't even tell there's a muma at all, so it becomes kosher again.
Right.
It's like a bad bruise or something like that.
Right. I don't think it matters for our purposes right now.
But I mean, it's a very extreme version.
Because the opportunity returns.
Exactly. It's also, it makes way more sense in the case we've been dealing with it before. Because the case before, we were sort of mosaic and it's visible.
Right.
The whole point of this is it's never visible again.
Well, again, Bach is saying, right now it's Nico.
It's visible.
Now. I'm saying this is a better example of Hezek Shei Nico, because in the long term, it won't be Nico. You'll never be able to point
right.
And say that's the Hezek.
Yeah, but you could construct the case where there is some interim loss because of your...
No, I'm not trying to. I'm saying it's a better example of the physical orientation of the Shemnikar than
right.
The case of the Suramosan, where there is a physical manifestation
right.
Of the damage.
Right.
There's like an advantage to doing
it. It also makes Rashi a little more consistent, because he's the one that said that it's about physical changes to the object. Has a weaker.
Yeah, so that's a very good point.
So like, if there's a physical change to the object, why would it not be has a weaker?
And the whole point is, it's physical change, it doesn't last long term. That's very good. That's a good sheet of production.
You're saying with the box change, or?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
But not on the version that we have.
No.
Yeah. So the version that we have, so it's a Nikar.
First Rashi is good, but the second one's very bad.
Wait, you're saying this Rashi is good?
Yeah, Rashi's good, because that's a Nikar, because it's not a physical change.
Right, but then this is problematic, because that's what makes it...
Right. But according to the box,
right,
so there's a temporary physical change, and the reason why...
That should make it Hezek Hanikar then.
So it's like sort of Nikar, but it's physical change, but it's temporary. And the fact that not all the animals are brought like as like a serif to the fact that it's only temporary change is like makes it the most
authentic.
Right. Because for that week, let's say that you can't bring the korban as you can't bring the animals as a korban, well, there's other things you can do because not all korban, all animals are brought as a korban.
Right. I got that. Okay. The Shumasak Kri, if you look at this piece, has a different answer for Rashi. You posted for Eschayim. He says, so it sounds like he wants to say. I don't know exactly what he's trying to say here. He has a few points, but here, so this is the best formulation. He says, once Rashi says that it's kulu shorim lav mizbeach kaimi lama lay sulu kum v'mum v'dukin sheven v'lu yiyye v'mum hanikar lama lo yuchal lomar harishu chalafanecha. Right, so he says,
Go to 5, probably.
That's not good. Give me 1 second.
I'll register now.
What?
I'll register now.
His argument in Rashi is that that even if it was a mum hanikar, he should be able to say Harishu Chalafanecha. I mean, there's no hezek. Havalei hezek shein hanikar. So what's critical here is that he wants to say again, like the Bach, that even if the mum is nigar, so it will be considered hezek she'eino nigar because the nezek that's ba machmas hamum eino nigar, and that's what constitutes hezek she'eino nigar. So he thinks that the point here in Rashi is that it's not about the physical change in the object, What's really important is whether or not there's some loss because of that change.
But either one is sufficient?
Well,
I mean, either one of those is sufficient?
Yeah, it seems like it, right. Either one would be sufficient on its own. What do you mean either one is sufficient?
Either it's not a visible moon, or it's a visible moon, but it's not all on.
That either one would constitute Hezekshen or Nikar. Correct. Okay, good. So I think these two cases are just clear cases where the Hezekshen or Nikar issue is about lost opportunity. Okay? Not about physical changes in the object. Yosef.
Your third answer would be that the first Rashi is an explanation for why the mum doesn't cause a loss in market value. Meaning, normally, if the mum was Nikar, it would sell for less on the meat market.
Yeah, so that's what Shumas Sakri thinks. That's his answer for Rashi. But in your bonus Rashi, the boy left to get a mum on Nikar, a piches, but the man shall him off in a chula.
Obviously, Shumas Sakri was either or would be sufficient. You could read Rashi that term.
For Hezekshen or Nikar.
Yeah.
He's saying all Rashi's getting at, though, in saying both of these, is he's trying to exclude like a blemish that would affect its chulin value. That's all Rashi's. That's really what he's getting, which is what you're pointing at also.
Right, but it's not either or. Like, if it was Eino Nikar but did definitively damage it. I mean, if it wasn't visible, it would definitively damage it. That would not be Hezekshen or Nikar.
It would be Hezekshen or Nikar.
Right.
Okay. It would be Hezek and Nikar because you're depriving. So if this was like good, if it's the guy who just raises hektish animals, even if the mum is imperceptible, that would be considered, I guess, Hezek Shein or Nikar. Is that what she wants to say? Yeah. It's only Hezek Shein or Nikar here. Correct. If the guy is raising hektish animals and the mum is imperceptible, but all he does is raise hektish animals, that would be Hezek and Nikar. I think.
Oh, okay.
Right?
Right.
It's only Hezekshen or Nikar here because Kol Behemos Lav is Be'ach timing.
Right.
Right. That's that.
I think Isaac is understanding the, I forget the person's name. The
Chumash Sakri?
Chumash Sakri is saying either.
So it's his brother.
Either if it was, you know, that even if he's raising it for practice purposes, since either one is the other, then it would be considered Hezekshen or Nikar.
Is that what you're saying, Isaac?
I was. I mean, I think it's Chumash Sakri.
You're saying that if... So you're saying, you know, even if it wasn't raising it for hektish purposes? Even if you were and it had a mum?
Yeah, imperceptible mum.
That'd be Hezekshen or Nikar. No, I think the fact that you're changing... I think the fact that you're changing the market value definitively would make it Hezekshen or Nikar in this case. That's what I would think.
It wouldn't change the market value.
For a guy who's just raising hektish animals?
It's an imperceptible moment.
But we know that you can't...
Bring it,
well,
bring it to the market to sell.
Oh, I mean, you just sell it for... I mean, there's no lost opportunity. And there's no cost difference for him. I mean, he's not making more out of his hektish animals and his chulin animals.
Right, I
guess so. I just have to think about that. Okay, this next case, the Eved Chasa Rabba Puti, is our third case. So this is clearly a different conception of Hezekshen or Nikar altogether. Not just about, it's not Hezekshen or Nikar because of the background market conditions, or because of a lost chance. So what's the case in Gittin Mem Mem Beis? The case is as follows. I own a slave, and I borrow money from somebody, and I put a mortgage on my slave to secure payment. So Rabo She Asa Abdu Aputiki. And then what happened? So I borrow money from Isaac. So Isaac now holds a mortgage against my slave. And Isaac is a nice guy, and he's Meshachar my Eved. Even though he's not a Bailim, he just holds like the mortgage lien against it. So the Gemara says that Mipnei Tikkun Olam, the Eved is considered to be freed. It's a Dindra Bana. So that's what Ula says. Ula Amar Mishachro. Rabo Sheni, that's Isaac, the person who holds the mortgage. Shuras Adin Ein Eved Chayv Klum B'Mitzvos. The Eved is not freed Meikra Adin, because Isaac's not the Bailim. I'm the Bailim. Isaac merely holds the mortgage rights. Elam Ibnei Tikkun Olam, but because of this Tikkun Olam concern, we're Meshacharim Sharei Yatza Alav Shein Ben Chorin. People heard that my Eved was freed by Isaac. So once it's Yotze Alav Shein Ben Chorin, so Kofen as Rabo Rishon, Biosa Osa Ben Chorin. So you coerced me to free him, Lagamri. Right? Takana Drapana. Everybody understand the case?
It is Migra and his Chayav.
Migra and his Yevet is still an Eved. Midrapana, I'm obligated to free him. Now, the Machokas Tanayim, so Kosi Shar Al Dama. So I'm incurring a loss, right? I'm incurring a loss, I lose my Eved. So is Isaac considered to be a mazik in triggering the causal processes midrabanan, which require me to mimshacher my eved? That's my focus. So the first view is kosev shar al damav, that's one day in the Mishnah, which means that Isaac's pater, just the eved has to reimburse me for the hana that he receives from now being free. It's like a few mashanana principle. The second view is Rashbag's view, and of kosev al mishacher kosev. Isaac's chayiv to reimburse me for the damages that he caused. The Gemara says, what's the machlokes? Whether Isaac reimburses me or the Eved? The hezek she'eino nigar kamithugi. Mar sabar shmei hezek. So if Isaac has to reimburse me, it's because hezek she'eino nigar shmei hezek. And if he doesn't, it's because lo shmei hezek. So what's the hezek she'eino nigar in this case? Everybody understand the case? Yeah? So, what's the eino nigar in this case? This is not a lost chance kind of hezek she'eino nigar like the earlier cases.
You completely lose that.
What?
Completely lose that.
That's the hezek, right? What's eino nigar about it?
It's not really you. It's the dindra of
before
it's under free.
So this is like the garmi, or like the grumma kind of hezek she'eino nigar. Where like the connection between Isaac's action and my resultant loss is not clearly established, right? So you can see, Tosa says almost, "Aval shichur de rabo sheni de lo habe el midrabanan chashiv hezek sheino nigar." Let's read it. So let me put this differently. So the first view in the Gemara is another daya that what's going on in the Mishnah is where the rabo rishon's mishaper him. So. Same case, Isaac's the Rabo Sheni. Same case, Isaac has a mortgage against my Eved, but then I want to mess Isaac over, so I'm a shachar my Eved, which destroys his mortgage. So the halacha is that Isaac Isaac can't collect from my Eved, right? So Tosfos says if that was the case in the Gemara, that would be Hezek Hanikar. So the Rab the Mukila Beshichro Rabo Rishon Chashuv Shachar Hezek Nikar. If I were to mishachar Eved to my Eved to ruin Isaac's Shibud, then that would be Hezek HaNigar. Aval Shichur the Rabo Sheni the Lo Hava Elam Yidravana and Chashav Hezek Sheni HaNigar. So it's the fact that there's no Me'ikar Adin freeing, it's just a Din Drabanan which is triggered by Isaac's actions, that's what makes it Hezek Sheni HaNigar. And you can see the Rambam says this very nicely as well. Hadar Minan V'Hezek Sheni HaNigar Kamechuli Lomar Zeh HaSheni SheShichur HaEved Kivan She'en Shichuro Klum Min HaDin Eino ela iser she'asar she'asro rabo rishon v'garam lo she'yishacharenu. Isaac's actions just triggered this din drabanan which imposed some sort of duties on me. And the Rambam says v'dome lemetame taros she'ein hezek nikar. Somebody see that? But in the case of ashichur rabo rishon, in the inverse case, where I do the freeing, kivan shenifka shibudo legamri hezek nikar hava. Because some way my ruining Isaac's mortgage would be considered hezek shenifka nikar kimochel shachov. You know, it's like if I issue a check to Isaac and then I call my bank to void it, that would be hezek nikar for whatever reason. Okay. And obviously, this is the Gemara, which is what prompted the Meiri to say that. Hezek she'eino nigar is this case of she'adam mazik b'shel achirim hezek she'ein bo shum chidush le'inyan dina, where there's no me'ikar adin change to the object. Kegon timei taros v'timei perosav she'ein bo shum chidush le'inyan hadin el le'inyan iser. You're just triggering some iser halacha which is affecting the momentous. That comes from this miri really came from that sugya in Gittin. Okay. You might want to raise any issues with this case of Hezek she'eino nigar. So I think here we're using Hezek she'eino nigar as like a proxy for Garmi or for Grumma. Not in the sense of Bava Kama Tzadiches of a lost opportunity or something like that. Want to see something, Isaac? Or?
I don't know, you read the application to this case, is that really similar to the way you understood it before? That it's like about your idea versus...
Because here there is, I mean, there is clearly a question about application. Right? I mean, it's not about the fact that we're not going to care about the value of something that's common A or tunnel or... Here the point is, like, we do force the guy to set free those slaves, it's just that it's not like it's like direct involvement in it that makes it.
Right, and he does generalize to other cases, though. He says, so in respect to this case, it's v'chein v'shichru sheni ha'yula megalgal lo din hezik shen ar nigar emnei shem en adin lo hezik oklum el b'nei takanas mitzvos. Right? It's just the takanas mitzvos which causes the nezek. And then he generalizes it to these cases. V'chein b'din hezik shen ar nigar kohanim shepidlu l'mikdash v'losev malacham l'echatas v'gazal tshuma v'nitmeis v'chein gezal matbeah v'nifsal hol of ikara hefzid lo asa v'klum v'shelo nishtanis tzuras adav raklal. So the Miri does want to generalize this to all the cases where it's as if just the Isser is creating the Choshe Mishba loss.
Right. Sorry, but isn't that just a way of basically saying that since it wasn't you directly, it was some sort of external thing that caused it?
He doesn't use Grama to describe it. I'm just saying that, I'm saying the best way to describe this kind of phenomenon is the Grama framework. Because like you didn't directly harm him in Choshe Mishba, you triggered something in your day or whatever, which and forced him to lose, take a loss in Choshe Mishba. Yeah. Okay, good. So much for that case. That's the second sense in which there's Hezek Shen Ar Nigar, because of causal processes. Noah, you want to say something?
It's really like Dune about whether if like that's considered Mazit or Shogi. Like it seems like that's like a amazing type of thing.
Oh, this case?
Yeah.
It's interesting. It would depend, though. If you hold, maybe if it was amazing, then you could be mechayev him under the knas and chanami. So you'd recover something. Yeah, that's a good point. Okay, the third case that the Gemara has, although the Gemara doesn't explicitly call this Hezek Shen Ar Nigar. And it's machlokes in the Ramban, whether this is actually Hezek Shen Ar Nigar. But this would be about visibility, about whether there's some discernible loss in the item or some change in the item. So this is the case of Mechitzah Kerem Shenifritza. You have the wall falls down, and the Tevuah mingles with the Bifanim. So Tosa says that this is a case of Hezek HaNikar. Afagav HaHezek Shen HaNikar Losh MeHezek, Nir Lurid, the High Chash of Hezek Nikar, Shrei Nikar, Ushu, Kilayim, Shrua, Gifanim, Besada. So just the... in order to present the Hezek Shen Ar Nigar, it says you can't perceive it. But in the case where the client mixes with the Tavua, it's considered Nigar because you can see it. So here, what determines is just whether you could perceive it or not. Tosha says it's above a common of Kutman Bez also. The Ramban in Dima Digarmi is not sure about this. The Ramban has two days. He says, about Mechisla Kerem Shenifritza, Hare yesh machmas yusha shehu agorim. Irvuv shehu mevatel hashura v'oser tuwaso shazeh. V'hezek nikar hu shemeachar shenizyaye shehirvuv osro v'isuro nikar lacho. Does everybody see this? So Ramban here says like Tosos, first of all, that it's like nikar because you can see the mixture. Then the Ramban hedges and he says v'yachal pisha ati yachal la'akar ha'gefanim. Wait, why can't you just disentangle the tvua from the gefanim and then it'll no longer be nikar? So he says, oh, shino yachozu lebriyaso v'chigon zu, shino yu. Baharinasa bo maisa nikar b'gormaso shalzeh. Even though you could turn the clock back and just disentangle them, he thinks the fact that they were like once mixed together is sufficient to constitute nikar. That's the Ramban's argument. But then he backtracks in the next paragraph. And he says, V'yishlomar d'haynami hezek shen ar nikar hu mishum knas m'chayv el rav meir. Maybe the reason for kilayim is really that it is hezek shen ar nikar, and it is chayv under the knas of b'mezid. So you see, machlokes between Tosos and the Ramban here, whether you could view the case of kilayim with the kfanim with the tvu as a case of hezek shein nikar. But what this case turns on is whether the fact that they were mixed together once and it was nikar that there was an iser, is that sufficient to render it hezek shein nikar even if you could disentangle them? Right, there's no essential change. They're just mixed together. So Ramban's saying maybe the fact that you could disentangle them makes it hezek shein nikar. In which case you could only collect under the knas. But Tosos wants to argue at least the fact that they're mixed at one point is sufficient to discern the damage and to qualify as hezek shein nikar.
That's a good question.
But
how is this case possible? I think you can be osur somebody else's stuff and collect.
No, it's passive.
Passive?
Meaning that the guy tells him you should build a fence, and then the guy doesn't build a fence, and then all of a sudden the great vines merge with it throughout.
Does that work to make it kill item?
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought like it's a mission to kill item, that if I go and make your stuff into kill
item. But
it's
not
your.
And that's not active, it's passive.
That's the difference?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Okay, so the next case is much more difficult. Here's a difficult case that is problematic.
That case, that's just from another Rashi, Photos, and all those errors, you know?
About what?
Whether.
Idea versus visibility.
Right.
So you're saying for Tosos, it's you have to.
Yeah, it's Tosos. And then the Ramban is saying, like, oh, according to Rashi, it's not going to be either.
There's no change in the.
Right,
thing itself.
Right,
because no change in the actual thing. And like, well, that's what they're not specific about, like between Rashi and Tosos. Exactly. Yeah, it's a good way of putting it. And that's why this is a third, saying this Gemara really is a third, this is really a third kind of hezek shein nikar, right? It's different from the first two paradigms, right? The first paradigm of the Baal Mum is about the background market conditions. The second paradigm is about the garmi, right? It's you trigger something in your idea, which then has effects in Choshen Mishpat. And then this last case is about like this perceptible or physical change in the item.
Right, but this the third one is just the same as I mean, where
yes,
it's,
yeah,
it's
yeah,
the
yeah.
Same,
correct.
It's the same case of mitame, but at least according to Rashi and according to Tosfos.
Yes, it's consistent with the principle of mitame midame. Right, it's closer to that paradigm of gittin la nun gimel.
Correct.
Okay, this next case of Tzadi Ches is very difficult. Because here, maybe this is closest to the Ebed Ahutuki case. To the, the Ahutuki case. So, Rava says, Hashok matbeh shel chaver your pater. So if you wear out your friend's coin, and you can't use it anymore, your pater. My time, adahalo alai v'lomidi, you didn't do anything. So the point here is imagine somebody has a coin and you just like press the coin in a way where you change the imprint. So you fade out the imprint or you push the imprint in without the coin actually losing any of its metal content. So it loses its circulation, but your putter, as the Rishonim point out, under Hezek Shein Onikar. So this is very difficult, right? Why is this Hezek Shein Onikar? You can see that Rabbi clearly calls this case Hashav Matbeh Shel Chaver Shu Pater Mai Shom Yim Tamei Yim Dameh Adam Yim Mezer Chayiv Masal Lishi Shvi Chayiv Mezer. But why should this be a case of Hezek Shein Onikar in the first place? That you're Pater. Are you causing him to lose circulation of the coin because you ruined its Matbeh?
The material value of the coin is identical, but it's used to change.
So you think
it still has the same amount of silver or whatever in it, but it's not legal tender anymore. So
it loses its value, though, right?
It does lose its value, but it loses its value purely out of usage.
Yeah,
it's similar to like the animal case.
So it's like the Baal Mum case.
Yeah, exactly. You can melt the coin down and use its material for whatever you want.
You
can't use it to purchase it.
So it's like a loss of opportunity.
Exactly.
It's one loss of opportunity. Except it's a little different because why?
So coins, most coins are used in the market.
Yeah, you'd assume this is like, you know, kulu coins are omeid lehektish in the sense. Like, all these coins are made for circulation.
I don't want to discuss this because this is not important, but I don't know if that was true at all in Tanimara.
What these coins were used for?
I'm saying coins were made out of this proper amount of silver. That is,
and they have multiple usages.
Yeah,
right?
I'm saying, I don't think it's fruitful, but it's not fruitful. So I'm saying it could be.
Right. Because it depends empirically, like what these coins were.
I would still assume that row.
Right. I would assume that's what a coin is used for,
yeah.
Right? It's used as tender. Noah, what were you going to say?
Yeah, could you also argue that, like, this is like a meetup, not a lava, that, like, you're using
just,
because you're using it for its designated purpose.
Essentially,
like,
though, I don't know what the friend was here. I think this is like, you know, I pick up your dollar bill and I just start, you know, rubbing it or something.
Menacing type of guy.
Well, yeah. Right. So I don't know if it's like, oh, you lent a coin to somebody and then it got worn down and made some machmas and lava. So good. I think the best way to think about this case is analogous to the Hektish case. A lost opportunity of usage. Although I think Ellie is kind of right that I'd imagine that the standard usage of a coin is for circulation. And yet we're saying this is Hezek, Shein, or Nikar. Right? So remember, here there is a this is like the Hektish case, that there is a physical change in the object. But the physical change in the object doesn't ruin all of its possible usages. Yeah? Are we in agreement about how to interpret this case then? Yeah? Okay, the next case is...
But if that's true, and that seems to reinforce kind of the point that I've been looking for in the Hektish case, that it's not about trying to figure out what would you have done, but it's more about just like, do we care or not?
Correct. If Ellie's right. Meaning that the coin is normally used for... There's a good presumption that it's used for circulation.
Right.
And you're saying, oh, the fact that you can melt it down or have it like re-hammered, re-chiseled or something. Right?
Right.
Yeah. But except that it's strange though, because here there is a physical change to the object. Right? So why not just say that the wearing down the coin's face is nezek to the difference... Right, however much it'll cost you to have the coin face like reminted or something. Right, whatever the difference between a coin that circulates and a coin that doesn't circulate is, so let's say that, why don't we just say that wearing down the coin is nezek with respect to that use.
No, but the point is that it's an opportunity to be able to use a coin as currency as opposed to use a coin as material for making
metal.
A bracelet.
Right, it's metal for its metal content.
Right, so you don't need to be chosen by it. You don't need to engage in that activity.
And there's no market difference, you think, or if there is, it's not significant.
There's a huge market difference.
Well,
there's a huge market difference for making notice versus being able to buy anything you want.
Between what?
Being able to make notice with it versus being able to buy whatever you want.
I mean, just empirically, there's not. Like, if you buy a gold coin, you're basically buying the weight of the gold. That's how much you're paying for a gold coin.
Like, historically, that's certainly how.
Current. If you want to buy a gold coin, you pay the weight, you pay the price of the coin, just the weight of gold.
The main significance, like legal tender, was usually just whether you could like pay like, taxes with it or legal things with it. It still had all its value.
Yeah.
I think. I'm pretty sure. I could be wrong. I don't think it's historical.
Yeah, that makes sense. Like, why would you have to weigh the coins?
Because that don't you mean the coin?
You scratch it off if you didn't press it down. Then
yeah.
You actually then this considered that.
Right.
If you
defeat it,
it's going to take away
from
its value.
Right. So I guess you have to say that the value here is minimal, or as Liad and Isaac are saying, the coin has many purposes. Even though the guy was going to pay taxes with this coin, the fact that he could use it for many things is sufficient. Sufficient to say it's Hezek, Shein, or Nikar. Right?
Ellie has a contribution.
What?
Ellie has a contribution. She
decided
to show up to
No, I just attached a link in the group about Roman coinage.
Oh, yeah?
It was mainly used for trading and businesses.
I mean, it mainly was.
Yeah.
Not for its metal content.
No, they said you could melt it down, but it was only certain cities that necessarily they were imprinting them, so it's not like individuals were just doing it constantly and, you know, reprinting them in
right.
a giant city.
Right, so why was it a value difference
yeah.
between when it had its matbea and when it didn't? So.
Wait, the relationship between those two points is just lacking.
It was
definitely mainly used for currency. I agree
right.
with that. When you had a piece of metal that used to be a coin, you can no longer use for currency. How do you know it's worth less?
Because it seems like that's like it had a niche use that people like needed it for, right? So I guess there's like it's complicated to get a new one.
Okay, people used all silver coins for currency. What percentage of silver was made into coins? Because silver was being used probably very frequently also for lots of things.
Right.
Right? So let's say if silver coins were 1% of all the silver out there, then the fact that all silver coins were being used for currency is not relevant.
The more important thing is that silver clearly has a lot of uses, and when you make it from a coin to not a coin, it still has all the other uses that silver has.
Right.
Only a percentage of like a silver coin was actually silver. As low as 2% of it during the first century in times was actually silver. So much of it was not really silver, so it would have been worth more.
Fair counterpoint.
Okay,
we're
gonna make fake jewelry out of it. All right.
Anyone else?
Look, I think you have to say something like that here in order to say it's hesitant or nika, right? Just that there are other usages somehow that, or maybe like the tirfa of getting it reminted wasn't like significant enough. Like it's not enough to qualify as method. But again, I think this is the closest to the lost opportunity, maybe. Again, I'm not sure. Okay, the next case is really interesting. So this is what I have as my sixth case, but I grouped two of them together, so we call it our fifth. So the Shkita case. Suppose you give, can I open a window for a minute? It's very hot.
Yeah.
So the Shkita case. So remember the Gemara on Sadi Tess in Bava Kama said that if you give an animal to a shochet to shecht, a tabach uman is chayav to compensate you for damages. So Rabban Dita Garmi talks about hezek she'eino nikar in the context of Shkita. So Ramban says as follows. So hezek she'eino nikar is pater. So tabach uman shekilkel is chayav. So Ramban says vishleim ha'grama v'ikur hezek nikaru. If there's some clear mess up in the shechita which you could see afterwards, so that's hezek hanikar. Ela shehiya v'drisa halo yediya. But what about shehiya where the shochet pauses in the middle of his shechita where you can never see the result in the animal? That should be hezek she'eino hanikar. Right? So look at what Ramban says. Lo kasha. Kivan shelo shachar kiroi hashechita atzma hi hahezek. This is going to get into very, very docistic a distinction here. All right, the Ramban's trying to say what, Jonah? Aren't you learning Geradea this year?
Last year.
Oh.
And we skipped Shkita.
Oh. Why use Micha?
Halachically, it's Nikar.
What?
Halachically.
Yeah, it's like the Ramban's trying to say, halachically, it's Nikar because if the Shkita is not a Shem Shkita, then it's just like Matis Rosha beside. And look, there's like a distinction between Shkita and Matis Rosha beside. Very great, very from the Chiddush Ramban. You know, because like the whole distinction that we've seen earlier, especially even in the Ramban himself in Gittin, in the Eved case, was that it's Hezek she'eino nikar if you're triggering halachic processes which cause the damage. Right? If it's the Yaradeya halacha which is triggering the Choshen Mishpat, that's Hezek she'eino nikar. But here, I guess Ramban wants to say it's more direct. Like, just like the Maisa Shechita itself now is considered to be a Maisa of Nezek if the Shechita wasn't kosher. So whereas, like, in the Gittin case, you just did a Maisa Shechur, and your Maisa Shechur now triggers some halachic thing which requires the Bailam to Meshachar the Eved. In this case, if there's a Yeradeya problem, then it's as if you directly damage the animal at Kosher Mishpa. Right, because you didn't do a ma'aseh shechita, or a nigar b'chayav shechita. Right, meaning you took it from being alive to being dead. Okay. What do you guys make of this?
The Ramban also writes the same thing in the earlier piece that we read in the previous. He says the Hatanami, but he's talking about like machshava and it's.
Yes, the pigle case.
Yeah, so
it's good. That's the next line. So, Yikasha the Chayim came to Fagel Nami.
Yeah.
So, pigle the Gemara says Hezek she'eino nikar. Right? So, why is it Hezek she'eino nikar? So, it should be Apostle Shkita. So, it says, Dikar Shkitasu lahava Hezek, so it should be Hezek and nikar. Yikal Meimar, Kiaminan Hafi, Hanimili Bipsuli Shkita, Shikos Ashla Psul Bishkita, Lo Shakta Ela Nivala, Nivla. Hava Kosha Shkitasu Kiroi, Vesar Acher Gorim La, the pigle case. So in a pigle case, where it's really the machshava, the shechita was bekashrus, but the machshava pasul, then it's hezek she'eino nikar. Because like you're really relying on this like kachim concept of pigle to pasul the shechita. But like the maisa shechita was kiroi.
I just don't get how he's going to respond. Why can't you say like I like Mati, it's not my Mati Brosha that caused the damage, it's the fact that for Asher then I'm
right.
Mati Brosha.
Right. I think it's very very Dakidakistic if you look in here. Right? It's not clear where the principal difference between these cases lies. Right? But you see what the Ramban's trying to do, right? You see the Ramban's move.
Now it's in the Vela because of this.
Is
that what he's saying at the end?
Yeah, so maybe this is the clearest Nafkamina you can point to. Right.
Yeah, we could be saying that the whole change between being in Vela versus not being in Vela because
not just Matis Rosh.
Yeah, it's not Matis Rosh, it's now possibly in Vela.
So he's making a good point. Right, he's saying that maybe what the principal distinction for the Ramban is whether it's a Maisa Shkibalim or it's in Vela. Then at least you could point to Shem Shkita, which is Mashir. But in the other cases, you can't. So in the Pigle case, it's a Shkita between the Tiger and the Vela. There's no Tomas Nevela in that case.
Can you guys know this Pigle?
Well?
Do you guys know from Korban that was in Fadil?
You may not be able to get Hanah from it, Al Tzpsul and Mokdashi.
What Nafkamina is there between being a Vela?
Well, there's Metame, I guess.
There's a difference between.
Yeah, I guess
it's one of the big five, then.
Yeah, but
who cares? Why don't you say that the
Matas
Rosha is
Motsiyah Midei
Menachah?
No,
I don't know.
It is. Well, I guess because the Nevela is a good standard for whether there's a Shem Shechita. Right?
Who cares about the Shem Shechita? I'm saying it's an Isser Acha that's goring the fact that you can't eat it.
Right.
So you can't eat pigo. Right? Who cares if it's not a Nevela, it's pigo instead.
Right.
The problem with Matas Rosha is the fact that the head's detached, but that is it that there's like a thrust or something.
That what?
That there was like a drusa that it was clearly that you hack off the head.
No. He's saying Shakia, right? Meaning he's saying in that case that's not a problem where like it's like obvious from like the action itself. Okay?
Right.
He's saying that the case where you could fit you would have thought it's a channel bar, you know, you just did something that's not physically recognizable. Just halakhically it's a problem.
Yeah.
No?
I say, I think we have to stop here now for a minute. So we'll pick up with this case on Wednesday, and then we'll talk about a Suffolk Psul in Shechita as well. So I'll wrap up these cases on Wednesday, and I'll wrap up the whole discussion of Hasachan and Nigar.
Okay.